Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Jessica Watts, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, Northwestern dining hall workers authorize a strike, an interview with Claiborne Cox, what the cities in your weather app reveal about you, those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. After months of negotiation, last Thursday, Northwestern dining workers authorized a strike. Sophia Queso walks us through what led to this moment in labor on campus and what's next.
On Thursday, February 27th, hundreds of cooks, cashiers, baristas, dishwashers, and catering workers at Northwestern voted to authorize a strike amidst ongoing negotiations with their union, Local One, and Northwestern's food service provider, Compass Group. Veronica Reyes has been working at Northwestern for 15 years. She works as a cashier in the west side of Foster Walker Dining Hall. She's one of the 500 workers whose contract expired on August 31st. For Reyes, it's been months without real progress.
Well, the process has been very stressful for all of us. I can't believe, you know, why Compass takes so long just to give us the fair amount on our benefits and that they don't respect employees.
So after over 6 months of waiting, a strike has been authorized. But what exactly does that mean? Kevin Boyle is a professor of American history at Northwestern who specializes in labor history.
They did an authorization vote. It authorizes their union leadership to call a strike. Doesn't mean they're going to have a strike. It just means that they are in support of the idea of going on strike, if necessary, in the collective bargaining process.
While it doesn't mean a strike is guaranteed, a successful strike authorization vote turns up the heat on Compass.
What they're saying to the company is, look, we'll give you a period of time, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, in which you can settle with us before we go on strike. But if you guys don't do it in those 2 weeks, then we're out of here. But they know that if they don't reach an agreement, that strike's going to come. And that's what ups the pressure.
However, the pressure applied by the potential of a strike is not a one-way street.
So the company has pressure to bargain to get this strike over with, but so does the union, because their workers aren't getting paid. And in a low-wage industry, which unfortunately the dining hall work is, most people can't afford to be out of a paycheck for very long. So it pushes both sides to try to get things settled as quickly as they can.
Workers have secured some protections for job security through measures like the Worker Retention Ordinance passed on February 24th by the Evanston City Council. However, workers remain concerned about many issues, like the matter of livable pensions, or rather lack thereof.
Unbelievable that we work in such a prestigious university that we cannot retire. I have a lot of coworkers who are already over 72 and they cannot retire because the money from retirement is insufficient.
Workers are also concerned about Compass's business practices in dealing with bad management and their own well-being.
We have a proposal to the company about management when they treat employees badly and they don't want to, you know, agree to that proposal. And this is very important because for a few years, what Compass is doing with bad management is just they're moving one management from one unit to another. And this is unacceptable. No one should be working in a hostile environment. And personally, I'm tired of hearing this, that a manager mistreats employees and they just move to another unit.
Therefore, if Compass remains unreceptive to these demands and others, the workers will likely go ahead and call a strike, which as previously stated will affect them and Compass, but a strike's impact stretches beyond these two parties. Therefore, the failure to reach a fair contract is not just a labor issue, it's a university issue. Here's Boyle again.
How consumers react to a strike, any strike, makes a huge, huge difference. But in this one, the reaction is particularly important because students have a lot of political power in a situation like this. If students brought pressure to the university by demanding that the university pressure the company to negotiate and settle, that would be in the union's favor.
And that is exactly what is happening. Weinberg senior Julian Pfeffer is a member of Students Organizing for Labor Rights, also known as SOLAR, a group on campus that advocates for and supports Northwestern service workers.
the workers right now are incredibly inspiring. And I think as students, we need to let ourselves be inspired by them and let ourselves be driven to action. I think all students should see that this isn't something that we can join in a week or a month. This is happening now because the workers are ready now. And now is when they've said that they won't tolerate Compass's failure to negotiate and Northwestern's failure to create just conditions for them. And I think we as students need to rise to that moment. And we need to be ready to turn up for workers, whether it's wearing a pin, signing petitions, showing up to actions, or getting creative in whatever ways we think we can support our campus workers.
On Wednesday, 65 students delivered Solar's petition to Northwestern's Office of Procurement and Payment Services regarding the current state of negotiations and the university's role and responsibility in the process. According to Pfeffer, the petition has two core values.
The first is that we as students are in solidarity with workers. We're demanding that Northwestern create a space that aligns with the values that it claims to have, so it treat workers with dignity, it pay them fair wages so that they can live financially secure lives, and it grants them access to a dignified retirement.
And the second, asking Northwestern to intervene and push Compass to sign off on a fair contract in order to not cause a disruption for campus life.
We came to Northwestern for a good educational experience, and this strike has the potential to mess that up. If there is a strike that impairs Northwestern's ability to provide us with what we came here for, then that's Northwestern's fault. And we call on Northwestern to make sure it is providing us with the academic experience that we came here expecting.
It's been years since dining workers have found themselves this close to striking. In 2021, dining workers authorized a strike but reached a deal with Compass before any further action could be taken. However, this time very well could be different, which would be a key victory towards securing fair treatment and conditions, but it can also be very daunting.
The common phrase in these spaces is nobody is strike happy. Nobody's happy to go on strike. It's a hard thing. The workers get paid less than they would, paid less by the union than they would going to work. So it requires an investment and a belief in the union, in your fellow coworkers, in students to show up.
But ultimately, people like Reyes are persevering through this uncertain time because of that faith, as well as their care for the job and the Northwestern community.
We are trying our best as a negotiation team to fight for a fair wage, a good pension, and respect to all employees. And I want to say thank you to all the students who have been supporting us. You know, we couldn't keep going without their support. I really love my job. I really love the students. I love when I meet freshmen, and I really love and enjoy when they come and tell me I'm graduating. You know, it feels a happiness. Even that they are not my kids, I feel like they're my kids.
Compass responded to WNUR News' request for comment with the following. Quote, we care deeply about our employees and have spent 9 months negotiating good faith with the union to provide meaningful wage increases and enhanced benefits. Our most recent offer includes an immediate $3 per hour raise, 16% increase to all associates, back pay bonuses, $7 per hour raises over the life of the contract, 13 paid holidays, 10 sick days, and an 80% increase in pension contributions, end quote. As of March 5th, the dining workers have not gone on strike. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Kesa.
There are many ways that overnight sensations deal with their newfound fame. For Claiborne Cox, it was continuing a comedy dream over a decade in the making. Gabe Shumway has more.
Just 3 short years ago, Alabama high school teacher Claiborne Cox had never heard the letters OOTD, short for Outfit of the Day. Now, that very trend has led to the start of him being a viral sensation with a new comedy special set to air on streaming services like Prime Video and Apple TV Plus in May. But comedy wasn't a new venture for Cox by any means. He'd been performing stand-up for years, beginning after a part of his graphic design class became a big hit.
So, as a school teacher, I used to do a story of the day, and the students seemed to enjoy that more than they did the content. And so one night I decided that rather than do one story, I would just have a story night at a local coffee shop and told the students, you know, if you're interested, I'm going to have a story night. And so in hindsight, I doubt that it was that good, but it felt good enough at the time, just kind of got bit by the bug.
Despite a late start to comedy after getting married, Cox had been telling stories from a young age. Growing up in small town Alabama with a plethora of cousins, he learned to be funny to pass the time.
The sense of finding humor, you get so used to it because what else are you going to do? Like, you know, we couldn't watch a movie any old time. We had to find some way to occupy ourselves.
These stories he developed throughout his life are what drew audiences to Cox. He didn't go viral on his own social media after all, but on his students' TikTok accounts. These videos amassed tens of millions of views. Here, he would tell stories about his frustration with the Little Mermaid lyrics, the anomaly of describing clouds to aliens, and most notably, his complicated history with corn. As with many viral sensations, Cox didn't expect this newfound fame. Wesley Ann Barnes, one of his students at the time, simply had him appear in one of her TikToks. The next thing they knew, it was everywhere.
We put one out there and fully anticipated that 50 people would get a chuckle, you know? And it turns out the first one got just millions of views, circled the globe.
Barnes is now a junior at Auburn University, in the same town that Cox teaches. She had known Cox since junior high after her mother, a school teacher herself, began working with him. Barnes started out making outfit of the day videos while modeling clothes from the local boutique where she worked. At the time, Cox didn't even know what TikTok was. For Barnes, the content quickly became more about the stories that Cox told in class.
It got to the point where he was starting to like come up with more ideas, and I'd be like, Mr. Cox, like, I can't film this fast.
In the years since, Barnes has come back to visit, and the two have filmed more videos. At the time, Cox had ideas written down on note cards that Barnes couldn't comprehend. Instead, she just chose to let him take the reins.
I guess his mind just works in a very different way. He's a very creative person, and his note cards are like drawings instead of words.
High school senior Sophie Higgins also filmed TikToks with Cox after Barnes graduated. Higgins notably went viral with Cox talking about corn, specifically how his students tormented him with the vegetable. From putting corn on his doormat, stuffing donuts with creamed corn, and even sending wishes of a cornderful evening on the menu at his anniversary dinner, he lamented about the craze that this vegetable caused on his life. Despite these stories' wide appeal with fans, Higgins had no clue that this would go so viral.
It's such a cliche thing to say, but I mean, you never really know what's going to go viral, and I think the way he told that story was just the thing that really got people, because it is a funny story, and I've heard him tell it like multiple times, and I laugh every single time without fail.
While this newfound fame was a surprise to Cox and his students alike, others were not as shocked by the ordeal.
That's classic Clay. If anybody was going to blow up on somebody else's TikTok, it would be Clay Cox. That's right in his wheelhouse.
That's Ed Wiley, a Georgia comedian who opened for Cox when filming his new special, So Here's the Thing. Wiley emphasized that Cox's comedy appeals to people of any age.
Well, I mean, he's a middle-aged dad, but he's like a Gen Z muse. He can, I don't know, there's something about him that's just, it's offbeat but sincere, and he really appeals to everybody.
Wiley even encouraged listeners to watch Cox's content with family and friends of all ages.
You can show them to your mom. Your mom will think it's funny. If your grandma's on TikTok, show them to her. She'll think it's funny. It's true. Like, it's legit cross-generational humor.
For those who are fans of Cox's prior work in stand-up comedy, he said that this will look a little different. Much of his work for this special is inspired by the style of storytelling that got him this online fame.
I thought it would be fun to make a comedy special stylistically very comparable to these TikToks. Does that mean like not so joke heavy, but like the pithy, punchy, bizarre storytelling with a little crowd work?
Cox's role as a teacher, known by his students and fans across the world as Mr. Cox, has also played a role in his comedy. It's never easy to make a room full of teenagers laugh, but Cox is thankful for how they help him to connect with different groups of people. He even noted that his crowd work has improved by talking to his students in class.
Teenagers are an honest audience, which I appreciate. You know, if they don't think something's funny, they're not going to pretend that they do.
These very students are also the ones who played a pivotal role in Cox reaching the point he is today. In the words of his students, this overnight fame and new comedy special could not have happened to a better guy.
He's very funny. He talks to our whole class. He's friends with quite literally everybody, and everybody knows who he is. I've never met somebody who doesn't like him.
I've really loved seeing how big his shows have gotten and all the attention he's getting, because he does deserve it. I mean, he's seriously hilarious. And then also, like I said earlier, he's so kind that, I mean, he deserves the attention and love that he's been getting. I'm proud of him, honestly. I'm proud of my high school teacher, but I am.
For WNUR News, I'm Gabe Shumway.
It's no surprise how much you find out about a person when you're looking at their phone. But did you ever think to go take a look into their weather app? Naya Reyes talked to some people whose weather apps reveal more about them than just their location.
News Channel 7 and 4, 24-hour weather.
The apps we have on our phones can tell you a lot about someone. What games they like to play to kill time, what fast food places they like to order from, what their dating preferences are like. But the weather app can tell you a lot more about someone than you might think. If we can only be in one place at once, then we should really only need to know the weather for where we are, right? Yet, many people have far more than just the place they live saved in their weather app. Like Nashville native and sophomore at DePaul, Livia Mitchell.
Nashville and Chicago. And then the hometown or the college towns of all of my like super close friends, which is Waco, Texas, Columbia, South Carolina, Knoxville, Tennessee. I also have Orlando, Florida, because that's where my grandparents live, and Atlanta, Georgia, because that's where my other grandparents live. And then I probably had like a few random ones.
For Mitchell, having so many locations in her weather app was at first just something fun for her to look at.
I would like to compare it just because we're all so scattered. And I fear Chicago is just always way worse than everybody else. Or like on the
what started out as a way to see what her friend's day might look like turned into a way to stay close with them.
Between me being in Chicago and one of my best friends being in Texas was like super polar opposite. And so like, it was kind of just like funny to hear about like how it was so horrible for her at the beginning of the year, cause it was so brutally hot and she would like step outside and it's like 115 degrees and the complete opposite side of the spectrum when I'm like coming back to school and it's like negative 30 degree wind chill. So I do feel like it was like an easy thing to talk about, because it's like hard for people to understand your life and your city.
With her grandparents, monitoring the weather of another place is a habit that both Mitchell and them take part in.
Asking me about it because they'll see on the weather like something serious happening in Chicago. So it has been like something very easy to talk about with them, because sometimes there's just like an awkwardness with talking to grandparents because of the age gap.
Northwestern senior Joel Reyes.
I currently have my location, Evanston, my hometown, Houston, the greater metropolitan area that I'm from, the Woodlands, an adjacent neighborhood near Spring.
Finds himself in a similar situation.
Cagayan City, that's the city that I was born in and most of my family resides in.
That's in the Philippines. Reyes moved to Spring, Texas when he was 3 years old.
Well, I don't talk to my relatives there on a day-to-day basis. It is a good opportunity to see how things are. Cagayan City is just now getting out of rainy season. I know for us, kind of in comparison, in the United States, we're still kind of getting through winter. It's cool to be able to see that contrast, especially.
Like Reyes, Mitchell has loved ones scattered throughout the world. Having their locations in her weather app allows her to stay close to them wherever they might go.
A lot of my friends are abroad this semester, and so I find myself frequently checking what the weather looks like in their city, so maybe I'll just like add them so it's just like on my app easier.
For WNUR News, I'm Naya Reyes.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Fake spring has come and gone, and winter is back in full force. Temperatures will remain in the 20s and 30s throughout the rest of the week. Tomorrow should, however, bring sunny skies to help balance the chill. Be prepared for some light snowfall Friday afternoon. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. The Evanston mayoral election is underway. Current mayor Daniel Biss is up against challenger Jeff Barini in a close race. At the heart of this matchup is the Envision Evanston 2045 debate. This plan addresses the future of Evanston's parks, housing, and community systems. The election will take place on April 1st. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson joined several other city leaders in testifying before Congress today. Johnson and other mayors of sanctuary cities were questioned by the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. The mayors fought to keep their city's sanctuary status intact. This status prevents residents without documentation from being prosecuted solely for immigration reasons. Target is facing a 40-day consumer boycott starting today. This comes after the company's recent shift away from DEI policies. The company is already facing many tariffs due to the recent changes in the economy. There have also been several signs that these shifts are already negatively impacting the company. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 89.3. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Gabe Shumway, and our reporters are Sophia Quesa, Gabe Shumway, and Naya Reyes. I'm Jessica Watts. Catch our final newscast of the quarter on Friday, March 7th. Now back to scheduled programming.